of that which dies and its principle of life.
That's
the meaning of death. Now, there is no principle of life in the soul. The soul is its own created life. Yeah. Then, 107, our parents pass on to us a part of their own souls. No. And the key word is part. When you use words like part or division, you're talking material language. Now, surely our parents do pass on, probably genetically, some of their qualities and things like that. But the substance of the soul is immediately created by God. But I should add then, in light of what I'm talking about, from the moment of our conception, we are already being affected by our mother and father, both. 9 months before we're born, we've already been conditioned by our mother and father. A large statement. The implications are tremendous. Because of the child then that is born, by the time it's born, has already been 9 months in formation. And not just in the mother's womb, but in the thing I mentioned regarding marijuana, didn't I last time? Just long scientific studies. And marijuana is not the most potent drug. Number 108. Souls exist before their union with human bodies. No. That, by the way, is one of the principal theses of Mormonism. In Mormonism, where they believe, as you know, in polygamy, they thought it out. There's just a large supply of disembodied spirits waiting for bodies to inhabit. So polygamy provides for the habitation for those really poor souls that don't have a habitation. There were early heresies of the church on this subject. Mormonism, by the way, is at least 2,000 years old. Oh gosh, older than that.
These things you're talking about today, it seems like there's this real unity between the soul and the body.
Say that again.
There's this real unity between the soul and the body.
Yes, they belong to one another. Unlike the angelic spirit, which not only can exist, which it does, without the body, it is never meant to exist in union with the body. Our souls, when we die, and I don't like to use the word we die, when our body dies, our soul remains alive as a distinct, conscious, and voluntary substance. But it is unfulfilled. And that is why we speak of a second heaven and a second earth, or second earth and a second heaven. And the second heaven, among other meanings, reflects this act of faith that the souls in heaven will enter on a new state of beatitude once they are reunited with the bodies. They are made for the body.
Father, would it be what is the teaching of the church in relation to the union of the body and the soul as discussed in, say, Aristotle's hylomorphism? Would the church declare that the body and the soul are hylomorphically united in Aristotelian terms?
What do you mean by hylomorphically?
Hylomorphically in the sense that Aristotle uses it, that one is the matter and the other is the form, and the two together form a substance.
Oh, yes. There's no trouble there, provided, after you've gone through Aristotle, but then you could draw on the resources of faith. In other words, the soul is more than just the form of the body.
Yeah, it's substantial in itself.
You see, this is where Aristotle, he knew a lot, but he didn't know, shall I say, too much. And so, yes, hylomorphism, matter and form, yes, we buy that.
Sure. Okay, has it ever been defined by the church?
Hylomorphism? Well, yes, there is a definition regarding the soul. I don't have the exact words, but being in the form of the body, in the sense that, and this is why the church wanted to make sure, that each human being is an individual, and that spirit, the human spirit, is not a sum held, we then were condemned by the church, and the human spirit is just a kind of a cosmic spirit. There are a lot of little bodies with a piece of that cosmic spirit. So that each person's soul is the form of his body. We go on. Materialists deny the existence of the soul as a spiritual substance. That's right. And this, by the way, is an article of faith in communism. And I can tell you it's pretty much an article of faith in many modern thinkers. And there are exegetes that do a lot of harm to the faith. I mean, even Catholic exegetes, who insist that the idea of a real distinction between matter and spirit is a Hellenistic import. And there are translations. I haven't checked the whole Bible, but I believe there are translations in which the word soul does not occur even once.
And Father, this has a lot of ramifications for modern-day psychology, which denies the soul. Which denies the existence of a soul, or it's even relevant to their investigation, and has permeated the church and the seminaries.
Oh, indeed it does. Indeed it does. And, in fact, this one lesson, which lesson is it, the third or fourth lesson? What lesson is this?
Five.
Fifth already? Oh, gee. Fifth lesson. The implication of this fifth lesson, they're manifold. You're right. And let me tell you this, that in psychology, and there again, part of my background is a master's degree in psychology. And over the years, I've dealt with a lot of people, either psychological problems or psychologists and so on. Modern psychology, in fact, a good definition of modern psychology is psychology without a soul. And they're not even honest. They should not call it psychology, because Greek, psyche.
So,
this is my gosh, talk about dishonesty. Aristotle and Plato made the distinction. And these modern jokers, and they're jokers. It's a racket. Pardon me. It's a racket. So, where are we? 110. The human soul evolved from matter. No. And that, by the way, that article of faith is most important. Spirit cannot, this is the definition of it, evolve from matter. 111. Each soul is specially created by God when a child is conceived. Yes. And remember, I think I've given you this already, the four terms that go together. Fertilization of the ovum. Secondly, creation of the soul. Thirdly, infusion of the soul into the body with a fertilized ovum. And conception, which is the generic name for those three, and taking place at the same time. And over the years, now since 73, I've been reading so much about how those who are in favor of abortion, how they think. They just do not believe. They have no idea of what the soul is. They just don't. 112. souls do not evolve from matter. That's true, they don't. 113, parents cooperate with God in the creation of their children's souls. No. Now 115, matching columns. Soul, 115, anima. That's the Latin term for soul. Creation, 120, production by God out of nothing. In other words, where God produces something that simply did not exist before. Angels and human souls, 114, naturally immortal. Meaning what? Neither angels nor human souls can die. Why not? Because neither angels nor human souls have a principle of life. They are, or the souls, are themselves a principle of life for the body. And God, 118, absolutely immortal. Meaning what? Never had a beginning, cannot cease to exist. Special gift of immortality, 116, bodies of our first parents before the fall. In other words, our first parents were preternaturally immortal in their bodies. And then matter, 117, divisible into parts. Is going to have just a good, handy definition of matter. One definition, matter is quantitative being or quantified being. Whatever can be measured, whatever can be divided, that's matter. And spirit, 119, not divisible into parts. And then both matter and spirit can be further distinguished by saying that spirit is that which can think and choose, and matter cannot. Matter is that which is sensibly perceptible. Spirit is only mentally perceptible. You know the providence of God. God's providence is his plan for the universe, but not his carrying out this plan by his creatures. No, he has both. In other words, God's providence is not only his plan, but he's carrying that plan into execution. So that when, as we say, something happens, right here and now, God is actively involved in everything in the universe. And the word is everything, constantly. Number 122, God is present in all his creatures, absolutely. And whatever else we say, he must be present. Why? Because his presence is, well, the cause of their existence and activity.
How do you distinguish that from like a pantheism saying God is present?
Well, God is everywhere, but he is not everything. In other words, he is everywhere by his, first of all, by his power of sustaining the world in being. Then God is in everything by enabling creatures, say, to think, to choose, to move, to eat, whatever. But every action that we perform is constantly under the, as you may say, almighty power of God. But exercise, it comes somewhat freedom, constantly. Nothing ever goes wrong, never. Nothing. Nothing ever goes wrong with God. Nothing. Whatever goes wrong, it's something on our side. And he allows things to go wrong. Okay, number 123. We are to use all creatures in the same way to reach our eternal destiny. You better not. In other words, they're all to be used. But, as you know, St. Ignatius' famous distinction. There are some are to be used by being enjoyed. Other creatures are to be used by being endured. Some creatures are to be used by being getting rid of them. Others, finally, to be sacrificed. In each case, we have to find out, what does God want me to do? Number 125, how that 125 should be memorized. Our prudence is part of God's providence. How many people don't know that? In other words, God provides us with an intelligence which he wants us to use. And if we use our intelligence the way he wants us to use it, this is part of his providence. And we do not or should not blame God. Truly, this is part of God's providence. Well, all right, in the sense that he allows. And the two words you should remember, they're both providence. But the one is positive providence, and the other is permissive providence. The providence, positive providence is that which God wants. Permissive providence is God which allows. And we have to say this, listen, part of God's positive providence, hear it, part of God's providence is everything in the world, including all the suffering, all the pain. Absolutely speaking, the only thing that is part of God's permissive providence is moral evil or sin. He wants sinners to be punished. And let me tell you, America's, what is it, $3 or $4 trillion debt is nothing compared to the debt that America owes a just God for its sins. Do you hear me? That's the real debt. And my friends, we're going to pay for it. We're going to pay it. Barring what I hope will take place, a miracle of conversion.
Father, you said that all suffering apart, or all evil apart from moral evil, was part of God's
positive
providence. Does that include the suffering of innocence?
Yes.
So that would be part of God's positive providence. Okay.
In other words, and this is where St. Augustine is such a genius. And that's back in the 4th and 5th centuries, under the pressure from both the Manichaeans and the Pelagians, that why God allows sin, the last analysis only he knows. As far as we can justify, to speak that way, as far as we can justify God allowing sin, he must say that being all good and all powerful, he will draw greater good from that evil. We believe it. And we have to believe it. But once he allows human beings, or for that matter, angels too, to sin, then it is part of his justice that there be retribution for that sin, otherwise known as pain. Whenever a creature sins, it acts contrary to the will of God. That's the definition of sin. Any willful act on the part of a creature contrary to the will of God. Okay. So what does God do? He acts contrary to the created will in asserting his will. Anything contrary to the created will is pain. That's the basic theological definition of pain. Whatever is contrary to the created will. So, then, by the way, speaking to you, Ignatian catechists, one thing that we better understand well enough ourselves and then be able to explain it to others that there's no such thing as sinning with immunity. There's always a consequence to sin. And that, by the way, is God's way of converting people. If they are willing to be converted, it causes them pain. And once it dawns on them, for example, reading a paper recently defending homosexuality. There's a growing amount of literature, and some of it, my friends, by Catholics, defending the morality of homosexuality in learned journals. Big words, but. And this one paper that I was reading the other day said, we got a problem, however, with this AIDS epidemic. Problem. Gosh. God is hitting them over the head, you see. And they got a problem. There's a slight typographical error in our thinking. So, okay. What time is it? 8:12. Bill, we've gone to, how far have we gone?
To
120, have we?
125, we already finished.
We finished 125. What if we do this? First of all, I just love to give assignments. It's in my bones. They're all true and false, the first 35 of lesson 6, okay? First 35. But think them through. They're deceptively simple just because they're true and false. There are just centuries of theology or grammatic development blocked up those 35 questions. However, on now the spiritual formation level, what I would like to do, and we'll probably spend either the first half an hour or 45 minutes next. However, I've got a problem. Next Wednesday, I start a retreat for men in Chicago. And so I cannot be here. The retreat starts, in fact, Wednesday night and goes to Mother's Day and nearly Sunday. Am I correct? So, if we can have class on Tuesday, if we can. Can we make it on Tuesday?
Okay.
I'm home on Tuesday. I'd rather not miss a week if we don't have to.
Tuesday, 7:00.
7:00. 7:00 here on Tuesday instead of Wednesday. And but then, regarding the spiritual formation, what I'd like to do is to share with you some of Ignatius' principles on the spiritual life. It's up to you and God's grace to do what needs to be done. But I would like to combine some spiritual instruction starting next week. And I'll provide you with the material. What we might do is take a break on the doctrine, and maybe say take St. Ignatius. Remember the course that I have, Master of the Spiritual Life, on St. Ignatius. That might be a good way. And if I could, I have not had to do this ever before. I'd like to be excused for about 5 minutes. You know, my body sometimes acts up. So I'll be back in 5 minutes. Thank you. Can we go to 8:35?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir. So then, next week we will start on the spiritual formation, and I may not do what I suggested. Yeah, that is a question and answer, because I'd like to have, if you don't mind, spiritual instructions or instruction to spiritual life. And because we need it. I know I need it.
Father, do you foresee, or should we, would it be opportune for us to enroll in that?
To me.
For us to enroll in the spiritual
life? It mightn't be a bad idea. master the spiritual life. But I would like to provide, you know, courses on the spiritual life issues, you know, on our Lord, on His life, His teaching. Well, the teaching, of course, is and it's perfect because we each know Jesus Christ, the Son of God, which is what the spiritual side of the Ignatian Catechism is all about.